One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. We couldn't do it without you. Have you rated the show? I hope so. If you think we've earned 5 stars, we'll take it. We're fighting that algorithm battle like everyone has to these days. Also, The Octopus of Global Control is now available as an audiobook. It's 23 hours. So you can find it on Audible. You can find it on Spotify. Amazon's got it. You know, wherever you get your audiobooks, take a look, see what you think. The Octopus of Global Control is now available. We appreciate our sponsors. They make this show happen. We've got some new ones, and we've got some fantastic ones, too. They're health-related, right? I feel like we've got to take control of our health. If you do that, a lot of things get better. BrainSupreme.co, BrainSupreme.co is the place to go to find out what the mad scientists over there are putting together. Mushroom capsules that will help you. I don't know. I mean, I guess we can call this microdosing, right? There are three different formulas, actually, but the energy, there's one that's really good for energy going to the gym. I took it this morning before I went to the gym. You can just go a lot longer. It helps. It's very noticeable. It's noticeable, but in a subtle kind of way. You just kind of keep going. And next thing you know, you're like, oh shit, I took those things this morning. Yeah, that's probably why I was in the gym longer than normal. I've noticed that. take a look. There's a focus formula and there's an energetic formula and then there's the black stack. I mean, you can do whatever you want. So go to brainsupreme.co and read up on it. Take a look. See what you think. If you find something like the discount code is macro. Also, David Avocado Wolf has been nice enough to join us here and explain how to take, you know, how to just really jump in there and take control of your health. Because if you outsource this to the powers that be, you'll be sick forever. You'll be on a never-ending treadmill of pharmaceuticals, and you got to get off that. David Avocado Wolf can show you how to do that. He can help you out. He's got products that actually work. Go to davidwolf.com, W-O-L-F-E, Wolf with an E.com, davidwolf.com, and the discount code over there is macro. Do a little shopping, see what you think. These are the stores you're not going to find at the mall, okay? These are the products that you're not going to find getting advertised to you on television. These are the products that actually work from companies that are doing amazing things. And if you are so inclined, I hope that you will support the sponsors, because if you support the sponsors, it helps to support the show as well. And I like to think I've done a pretty good job curating the sponsors. I mean, they're selling products and items and services and supplements that do the things they're supposed to do. So thanks to the sponsors, both old and new. So let's party, right? Well, this episode is going to be a little bit of fun. I mean, you know, to the extent that, like, Uncle Ted told us this was going to happen. I mean, we were told. Nobody can go into this life. Nobody can sit down at the dinner table tonight and say, I can't believe any of this stuff is I can't believe it's as crazy as it is. You should believe. You should have known that this is the direction it was going. It sounds insane when some guy who's mailing bombs to people has written a manifesto about the dangers of technology. I can totally understand why the average person would be dismissive of what this man had to say in his manifesto. I get it. Especially if you were somebody that was on the periphery and that was harmed in some way by this. You clearly would have no interest in what this guy was saying. He would just be an unhinged lunatic mailing bombs to people who's got an axe to grind in some vendetta against society, and he's going to take it out on them in weird, random, sort of domestic, terroristic kind of ways, right? That's the way that the Unabomber was sold to the American public. Somebody's out there, he's a crazy person, and he's mailing bombs to people because he's mad at society. Okay, I mean, I had no reason to think otherwise. I remember when they were looking for him. I remember when the sketch was out there. I remember when it was a big deal. I mean, it wasn't like in terms of like day-to-day life, it didn't really matter for this guy to be like FBI's most wanted. I could think of guys that I'm more alarmed about than the Unabomber. I didn't get on his radar. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I wasn't worried about him mailing me a bomb. I don't know that I'd have him in my top 10 biggest threats to humanity. I'd put a bunch of people from Congress on that list first. They're far more dangerous than Ted Kaczynski, I assure you. But what I wanted to do is take a look at this, because we don't talk about Ted enough as we should. And of course, look, I don't agree with random violence like this. I don't think that is the answer. I understand it doesn't solve things. If you're blowing up the mail delivery guy, you're not getting back at the system. You're just being an asshole. So to the extent that like random uninvolved people were hurt, I'm most definitely against that. Whether it's, you know, just in general. But let's not forget about, you know, Uncle Ted had a point to all of this too. He didn't just wake up one day and have an idea. This was a process. And when we dig into the history of what this guy went through and his sort of story, he was predisposed to live this life. In fact, you know, it's a wonder that more of the people that went through the things that he went through didn't turn into this. We'll get into his past, but I think it's important for us to sort of dig in and find out who Ted Kaczynski was, why he did the things he did. Was he manipulated? Was he traumatized a bit? Oh yeah. Oh, this guy, this was no accident. This was no random occurrence. This guy was targeted, and the outcome of this should have been expected. In fact, it probably was expected. In fact, that's the reason why it happened. So Let's get into this. Ted Kaczynski, American mathematician and domestic terrorist. That's how they'll describe him if you look him up on Wikipedia. True. He was an American mathematician, and he was technically a domestic terrorist. He's also a number one, he was a best-selling author. I don't know if his book went to number one. I'm pretty sure it did. He was born in 1942. He went to Harvard. He has a degree in mathematics. He got a PhD in mathematics as well, not at Harvard, elsewhere. But he was a smart guy who had a deep history, a hardcore background in academics, in mathematics and science. He understood this. This was his life. You have to understand the mentality of somebody that thinks like a mathematician. There's a certain logic to the way that their brain works. And boy, it's tough to be a logical person living in an illogical world, especially when you come to understand, as Ted did, that very powerful people have a vested interest in making sure that the world remains illogical because it's how they operate. And for somebody like Ted Kaczynski, who sees a problem and finds a solution to it, when you look at society, sometimes a solution for what we're going through isn't in a textbook. And there isn't necessarily one answer, like there is in mathematics, of course. If you were using Common Core, the answer is whatever you think it should be. And that's stunning and brave, as we know. But in real mathematics, like the kind that Ted Kaczynski was involved in, there's one answer and one answer to the problem.
Right.
But in his world, there really wasn't. There were a lot of people that let him down along the way. And part of the reason why he became the person that he was in the end was because of his early childhood and the trauma that he was put through and the person that he was turned into, weaponized and then unleashed onto the world with these thoughts in his head and a scrambled brain. In the end, he wound up murdering 3 people and injuring 23 between the years of 1978 and 1995. And there was a lot of, he wasn't wrong on the writings. He might come across as a bit of a Luddite, maybe borderline Amish, somebody that wished for the good old days when, but I think that is, on some levels, that's normal, especially if things have gotten progressively worse. There's a tendency to remember how it used to be and how the world used to function, and that everybody didn't need to be in such a big hurry. The world went and got itself in a big hurry, like Brooks says in Shawshank Redemption, when he comes out of prison after being in there for 50 years, right? The world has gone and got itself in a big hurry. And I think that was something that was a little difficult for Ted Kaczynski to process, because he knew the dangers of where technology can take you. And he wanted to explain it to people in a way that they could understand. But it's almost like the train has left the station. We're on, everyone that's on it is looking for progress. They're not looking for reasons to not progress. They're looking for an option to move into the next phase of this. And when you're somebody that has a desire to prevent that, you're going to be pushing uphill all your life because progress is happening. And if you're somebody that's sort of against progress, and even if your statements and reasoning and logic for not wanting to progress are valid and logical and reasonable and correct, it's still going to be an uphill battle. And I think part of that is what Ted faced, is that he could stand on a street corner and scream into the sky, be careful of technology, and nobody's going to listen to him. But I think that a lot of us that work in information in an industry where information is unusual, we all experience that you can go stand on the street corner and yell into the sky and nobody will listen to you.
Right.
In part because the screaming into the sky comes across as unhinged and crazy, just as mailing bombs to people comes across as unhinged and crazy, or writing manifestos. I was writing The Octopus of Global Control one day, like in total secret, and I was on a bender. I was writing, and my wife had kind of like walked sort of in the room or sort of by it and saw me, like had asked me a question or something, and I guess I hadn't been paying attention because I was just extremely focused. And she said to me, are you working on a manifesto over there? And I was like, I am not working on a manifesto. And then as I got further in the process, I was like, I kind of am working on a manifesto if I think about it. You know, I was like, at first I was pretty offended by that comment. And then I was like, well, you know, what is the difference between me writing a 225,000 word Octopus of Global Control manifesto and Ted Kaczynski writing a 35,000 word Unabomber manifesto? You know, I guess there are some differences there. But I mean, the point is that sometimes it takes a little while to unpack these thoughts and you kind of need to put it out in writing. And it's not as simple as a 3-minute conversation on Conan O'Brien's couch or a 5-minute conversation on 60 Minutes that gets edited down or whatever. Sometimes you need the ability to unpack complicated and difficult concepts. And so the idea of putting together a 35,000 word manifesto is not completely out of the question. In fact, it's an interesting read. I think people should probably check it out and see if you're interested. Here's a little something. What I'll do is I'll bring some quotes from it. This is from Uncle Ted himself. The Industrial Revolution has radically altered man's environment and way of life, and it is only to be expected that as technology is increasingly applied to the human body and mind, man himself will be altered as radically as his environment and way of life have been. Interesting to use Ted's words in conjunction with what we're experiencing with the World Economic Forum and their push for a fourth industrial revolution and the transhumanism agenda, which, as we know, is the rebranding of eugenics. But it is the blending of man with machine to become something that is transhuman. And as Ted talked about here, as technology is increasingly applied to the human body and mind, man himself will be altered as radically as his environment. So as we make these changes to technology, human beings are impacted by this and forever and will be. As the technology increases and human beings choose to use the technology, they have no choice but to be changed. Now, maybe somebody would want to push back against Ted and say, changed, but maybe for the better. And of course, there is that argument to be made of the guy who loses his arm in a farming accident and gets a robotic arm put on, and now he's able to drive the tractor again with his right arm being a robot arm. And they'll do that story on 60 Minutes, and they'll talk about transhumanism as a savior, and isn't this amazing, and isn't this technology life-saving, and all that stuff is true, of course. That's only part of it. It's only part of the transhumanism story. And so, of course, they're going to sell the benefits of that, and those amazing stories of how this technology has been used in an amazing way to give human beings a second chance at something, right? And you can take that narrative and sell this forever, and that's what they'll do. But they're not going to talk about the concerns that Ted rightly had about what happens when man himself is altered. And that is a genie that gets out of the bottle and you cannot put it back in, as he rightly explains in this manifesto. That once you start to do that, there's no going back, and it's beyond. You create something that is beyond a human being. Something we've talked about the legal ramifications of maybe being considered transhuman, that you are no longer you're one deviation less human, and therefore laws don't apply to you, property rights don't apply to you. Freedom of speech doesn't apply to you, whatever. Everything doesn't, nothing applies. You have as many rights as your cat has, right? So this is something to consider as well. It's not just the trajectory of what this does to human beings on a physical or mental level. What does it do to human beings legally as well? That's a slippery slope that I don't hear anybody talking about with regard to transhumanism. And I don't know that Ted was caught up necessarily in the legality of it all, because this is a guy who liked to mail bombs to people to blow them up. So the idea that it's just, he came at this from the aspect of what will this do to a human being? And that's a great place to come at this question from. And when you understand what happened to Ted when he was going through college, all of this is going to make sense. I assure you.
We'll get to that a little bit.
But do you guys remember the Unabomber hoodie, sunglasses guy? You remember the sketch, the logo? It was a whole vibe. It still is, man.
I walked into a Halloween party one time. This was back in my honkies era, where we did this on several different occasions, where we were an all-white 70s basketball team called the Honkies, and we had uniforms made, the whole thing. It was sweet. We had an Asian guy on the team, which is hilarious and hard to explain. But I went to this party. We all went to this party one time, and I remember this dude's costume was perfect, because it was costume plus like behavior. And there was we're kind of in the living room and walking around the corner, and there was a dude who was intentionally standing in the corner, and he was dressed like the Unabomber. He had a hood on, he had sunglasses, and I remember looking, I was like, what is that guy's fucking outfit? And I was like, oh shit, oh my god, that rules, he wins. So we thought that was, you know, listen, it was everywhere. It was kind of like I'll tell you what, when everyone was out looking for the Unabomber with the hoodie and the sunglasses and the cool hair, and he looked like a guy that might, you know, he looked like a guy that might throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, or he looked like a guy that might be living out of his van. You really couldn't tell, because he had a little, but that also brings you back to a time before technology, right? Before everybody had cell phones, before everybody had social media and all of that. And it was an interesting time to be paying attention when you were looking for the Unabomber, right? He's like, well, are we ever going to find him? Like, well, if he looks like this sketch, if we found him, I'd go have beers with him. I don't know what to tell you. He looked like a pretty all right guy to me. But what he was into, ultimately, what he was into was he was interested in fighting against industrialization. And given what we've seen over the last, well, when he started this fight, he is 78, was when he started mailing things. So what are we talking about here? 50 years almost? I mean, there's been a lot to be upset about with regard to the industrialization, the destruction of nature, all in the name of progress, right? And that was something that irritated him, was that, well, we're going to make, how much of this progress is going to come at the expense of the planet? So he was kind of a lefty in the sense that he was cared about the environment, but he cared about the environment from an actual standpoint, not a let's measure carbon dioxide, anthropogenic carbon emissions that are only generated by man. We're going to really focus on that sliver of the environment. He just wanted people to not be negatively impacted by technology, human beings. And as a result, he also wanted nature to not be impacted by, I mean, I see nothing wrong with this. I understand, again, it's the process by which he got his point across was not great. But here's the but, it worked in the end. It got his message out there. So the ends justified the means in some regard. I mean, you also have to put this through his lens. This is a guy who's watched the government, who has a monopoly on terrorism, use terrorism to get their way over and over and over and over again. And in his mind, a mind that had been shattered by the state through all kinds of horrific experiments that we'll get to, it's not a stretch to understand why he would say, the state uses terrorism to get their point across, I can use terrorism to get mine. It's not an illogical jump. It might be immoral to do this, but again, you're going to have to put yourself in his shoes to understand why he felt the way he felt about the state and the state of technological advancements and who was pushing that. Now, the FBI, as we know, it's funny now looking back on these things, because we now have a better understanding of what the FBI is, that it is the largest domestic terrorist organization operating inside America. And when you know that they're the actual terrorists, then a lot of this stuff makes more sense too, because when you go back and you look, and the FBI had him, you know, he was on their radar, you know, he was on just, couldn't catch him, and he just slipped through our fingertips. He was on our radar. He was known to the FBI. Oh, really? He was known to the FBI? I wonder why he was known to the FBI. They had him classified as the university and airline bomber, and that was they took the, you know how much everybody loves these fucking acronyms, right? So they took these, the letters university, UN, and airline, A, UNA, BOM. So they took the first two letters of university. They left the word and out. They took the first letter of airline and they took the first three letters of bomber and combined them together to get UNABOM, Unabom. And then the media grabbed a hold of that and just started calling him the Unabomber. Registered trademark. I wonder if he gets a, I wonder if he trademarked it. That would have been funny. That would have been the ultimate like F you on technology. I trademarked it too, so I get paid. The CDC would bring him in to advise them since they love the idea of owning patents and licensing on vaccines. The CDC would love what he was done had done there. Well, okay, so he was on, like I mentioned, 78 to 95 was when he was in, that was his playing career. And he finally got arrested in 1996, and it was a huge deal. I don't know if you remember, if you've ever seen the footage, it was, I mean, they really made him seem super crazy to the general public, as the media does. And they you know, it was the perp walk with the crazy hair and the beards, and like, you know, and he was living in the woods in a cabin with no running water and all the things. It was like the checklist of what an insane person who's checked out of society would do. He was all of those things, at least according to the media. Now in reality, he might not have been all of those things, but it doesn't matter because that's the sales pitch that the media has. He looked the part. I mean, he was straight out of Central Casting in terms of like crazy guys that would, who would ultimately be caught mailing bombs. I mean, he blinded me with science. So they just pulled it right out. He had the hair and the beard and the disheveled look. I mean, he looked like Saddam Hussein. They were pulling him out of a spider hole somewhere. You know what I mean? I had that look on his face like you caught me, but I got you first. And the, you know, the media just really went to town on this and hijacked the narrative. And ultimately, he wound up getting arrested in 96, pleading guilty in 98 to everything. He got multiple life sentences without parole. He got sent to ADX Florence and lived there from 98 until summer of last year, 2023, where he, you know, it was announced that he had died of suicide, and that he had been diagnosed with cancer 2 years earlier and died of suicide. I mean, I think at this point, there wasn't really much going on in terms of like, did they suicide him like Epstein? Probably not. I mean, you know, at that point, he's been in there. He's not doing anything to anybody. And I don't think there's anything nefarious about his suicide. If in fact it was a suicide, I have no reason to think it was anything other than that. But how would I know? Right. I just don't know. I know that it's tempting when somebody commits suicide in prison, it's tempting to just immediately say they were murdered by somebody else. And I think a lot of times that is the case, but I don't know that there was justification or a need for this. His best known work, though, so what people know him the most for, of course, is Unabomber's Manifesto. But its official title is not that. It is Industrial Society and Its Future. And what we're going to do is we're going to get into it a little bit. We're going to get into the Unabomber's Manifesto, and we're going to ask the question, was he crazy or was he onto something here? You know, maybe a little of both. I mean, definitely mailing bombs is not the best idea, but his take on the direction that society is heading with regard to injecting technology into it is not off base. It's just a matter of timing, how long something like this would take to play out. And he might be wrong in some of the details, but overall, his line of thinking is surprisingly logical and laid out for somebody who would be considered to be crazy. Now, the system that we live in is crazy. And there's the old adage that it is no, you know, that I'll paraphrase it here, but it's no indictment of true health to be well adjusted in an insane world like this. I mean, there is something honest about feeling a bit crazy in this world because it is crazy. There are things that are being made to happen that are incompatible with how you would behave if you were living in a sane and rational society. And pointing this out does not make you crazy for noticing it. In fact, it makes it, if anything, I think the criticism should be on those that don't notice it anymore, that have lived in this world for so long, have intentionally blinded themselves to the insanity out there that they don't even see it anymore. Well, Ted Kaczynski saw it, and he wasn't going to pretend like he didn't see it, okay? He talked about, this was written in 1995, okay? And for me, this is an easy benchmark in my life to understand when he was writing this and where I was in my life. In 1995, I had just graduated from college. I was in the last college class to graduate without an email address. Everybody after me had email started. Everybody got email addresses right after that. So I'm thinking about Ted sitting down in 95 and writing this and thinking to myself now in retrospect, 30 years almost after the fact, it's like, you would love to have told Ted, like, you have no idea how much worse it's going to get. Like, just wait till social media comes. Just wait till everybody has a camera, a video camera in their pocket at all times. It's going to be wild. So I especially connect with this manifesto simply because, well, not just because of the content of it, but also because of the timing of the content. I know where I was in relation to this, in relation to where I was going to be with my life or where I was just kind of getting started. And reading how Ted viewed the technology of what was to come is fascinating to me. He believed that that this system suppresses and limits human freedom inherently. That the system itself destroys and suppresses the freedom that humans have. Simply by deciding to live inside this system, you will do so at the expense of giving away your freedoms, some of your freedoms, and that will be a sliding scale. So he also believed that because this system, due to the nature of its design, that it suppressed and limited human freedom, he continued that it, because of that, that means it cannot be changed or fixed, that it is not a feature, or not a bug, but a feature of the system, right? That if things are happening in a way that you find to be uncomfortable, or that you are not, that you don't like, you it's too late. You can't change it. It's the system. It's the way this thing was set up. And so he said, it can't be fixed, and it can't be changed. Oh, and on top of that, over time, it will continue to get worse. Not because you want it to, or not because somebody doesn't want it to. Again, it goes back to the way the system was designed. That an industrial society, simply by becoming and making the decision to be an industrial society, that action limits human freedom. And when you choose to do that, and you run this scenario long enough, over time, it will get worse. And it will only get worse. It will not get better. And you will not be able to fix it. So sleep tight, right? That's me paraphrasing 35,000 words. Okay. So, I mean, read it, you know, go through and read it, have your own experience with the information and you may get something different out of it. But the decision-making process for humanity has been intentionally limited in the interest of making the whole system work smoothly, right? So you don't get 31 flavors of ice cream. You get three. But you get three because we need the system to work better. And there used to be a time when you would get 31 flavors, but the system didn't work as well. In the interest of making sure that the system works, we've pared down your choices from 31 to three. But the system's going to work. And so this is what he's talking about when you start making these calculations. Because you are a part of the system, and because you have decided that you are okay with the 31 flavors of ice cream no longer being available to you, but now only three because you're in an industrial society that chooses to make sure that we've got a streamlined process and we can only do three because that's what we've decided. What he's saying is that you compromise yourself by participating in this system. You have no choice but to compromise yourself because the system compromises your decision-making process. It's fascinating ways of looking at this. And he says, sorry, freedom has been removed for your safety. Dangerous freedom has been removed. And whenever they remove your freedom from you, they have to give you a reason for it. And a lot of times the reason is what the Germans gave in World War II. It's for your safety. It's for your protection. Everybody wants to be protected, right? They don't want something to be there that's not for their protection or not for their safety. So if you need them to do something that they probably don't want to do, something that works, operates against their own self-interest, tell them that it is, in fact, for their safety, and you can get people to do it for you. And he knew this. And he also noticed something else about this, is that people will notice that they are compromising themselves, and it will impact them and lead them to depression, low self-esteem, and inferiority complexes. He was very concerned with low self-esteem. It gets mentioned more than once. And again, I'm going to wrap with the trauma he went through. But you can't help but feel sympathetic for a guy once you know what he was put through, to understand that he would be somebody who is extremely sensitive to low self-esteem and depression and inferiority, feelings of inferiority. But the system is the source of the problems, and the system cannot be changed. And so, now go deal and process that. Go live your slave life, understanding that you were born into a system, and the system is the source of the problems. The system leads to feelings of depression and low self-esteem and feelings of inferiority. The system will make you feel that way. And the system was put there intentionally, and the system cannot be changed. And what he's saying is that once you have that realization, and you have to process that mentally, that you're in a system that you can't fix and can't get out of and can't change it, what does that do to you psychologically? He said it leads to some real dangerous mental health outcomes. I ask you, do we not have a dangerous mental health crisis happening in the world in general, in America in particular? I would say we do. Is it technology connected? I'm not going to say it's all technology's fault, but does technology have a role in this mental health? I would say so. I would say smartphones, social media, and things like that all play a role. Sometimes beneficial for people, of course. Again, back to, there are benefits to these things. They wouldn't exist if there weren't. But there's a downside, and there's a downside to people that, you could get on Facebook and reconnect with friends that you haven't seen in a long time, and your relationship with Facebook is much different than somebody else's who's on there doom scrolling all day long, making themselves feel bad about the fact that they don't have this family or they don't have this life that these other people have, or why isn't this happening to me? And they have a much different experience with social media. They go home and want to kill themselves. You understand? So again, this is where Ted was coming from. This he noticed that these feelings from increases in technology would lead to depression and issues with self-esteem, and he was correct in his assessment. But when you're screaming about this in 1995, when people are walking around with a Walkman with a cassette tape in it, it's kind of hard to convince the world that technology is going to kill you, because it doesn't seem dangerous at that moment. It doesn't seem that way in 1995. You might have had a pager in 1995, but you didn't have the threat of a pager exploding. So things were different, and technology was different. And if Ted felt the way he felt about it back then, he would have had to have been institutionalized for just paying attention to the modern world. And of course, he was institutionalized in more ways than one. He talks about revolution, not reform. He's very clear on that, too. He said, this is no half measures. You can't vote your way out of this technocracy. He was correct in this assessment, too. He was very clear. You're not going to be able to talk your way out of it. You're not going to be able to vote your way out of it. You're walking into a huge mess. Technological societies also have issues with drugs and alcohol and mental health. He was noticing that. That is, Do you ever hear about when Steve Jobs was developing the iPad? It was pretty early on. And I'd love to find this information. Maybe I could find a clip where he says it or something. But I remember that he was very hesitant to give the iPad technology to his child. Or children, I think. I don't know that it was his child. I think he was talking about children in general. That it was like, this is great. This iPad's going to do X, Y, and Z and all this stuff. And they talked about it for use with kids. And he was kind of like, I don't know if I'd give it to kids right away. There's something to it. There's something in this technology that people who create it know more about it than the end consumer. There's technology, there's blue light technology in there. There's a lot of stuff going on that has mind control properties to it. And there's patents involved in this technology. There's a lot. There's a lot more behind this. So when you hear Ted Kaczynski go on and on about technology, he's not wrong when you understand the how this technology gets made and some of the hidden components of it. I mean, again, it's sometimes it's the technology, sometimes it's the company behind the technology, because like there's nothing inherently evil about microphones, but it's a huge problem when Google covertly adds microphones to the Nest thermostats and doesn't tell you. That's a problem with the technology. When they do things like that and it's hidden and it's devious and it's done intentionally. So, you know, Ted was extremely concerned about this, rightly so. When you read this manifesto, you have to remember this is written by somebody who went through serious, serious mind control programs in his college years. And he gets a pass on some of this stuff, because if you were tortured the way he was, you'd have unusual thoughts as well. He had a problem with gangs and militias, but he really hated leftists. Again, he knew what was going on. He might have been a crazy old man living out in the woods, typing up these manifestos and sending them to the press and sending bombs. And you can say that he was all those things, and because he was. But again, he was not wrong. He was not wrong about the direction technology is going, and he certainly wasn't wrong about his take on leftists. And this collectivist philosophy is poisonous. It's mind poison. It's not helpful. It's not, oh, I want to make sure everybody's taken care of and everybody gets fed and everybody has a place to sleep. That's fine. That breaks down after 200 to 300 people in the tribe. After that, you cannot maintain that. So the ideas of like collectivism is, these are ideas that are from people who don't have good ideas. It's not a good idea. It's not, real communism hasn't been tried. Real communism has led to 100 million dead people just by the state. So enough of that. When Ted has problems with technology, he's right. When he had problems with leftists and collectivism, he's right on that too. And he goes on to explain that they just cannot be a part of Uncle Ted's band. There's no room for them. There's no room for them moving forward in society. Because he said, one of the things he said is, if they give you a list of demands and you meet their list of demands, they will come up with a new list of demands. And that they will always be complaining about something. They're always bitching about something. You could say, well, you've got to treat the black man better. You've got to do this. You've got to pay reparations. And you go, fine. We'll give you all that stuff. You pay reparations. You know what's coming? You know what's coming a year later? Reparations 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's what's coming. And then Reparations 3, the sequel to that, because it's never going to end. And he points this out. He talked about, he said that he had a problem with globalism and leftism. Again, I can almost feel the audience nodding in agreement, like, okay, let him cook. Go on about this. He was talking about how globalism depends on technology, just like leftism. He said that the leftists depend on technology and that you could kill two psychopathic death cults at the same time, basically end technology and shut down the lefties kind of all at once, right? This is, he said, this is from Ted. The leftist is anti-individualistic, pro-collectivist. He wants society to solve everyone's problems for them, satisfy everyone's needs for them, take care of them. He's right. That's what the leftists want. They want the state to solve all the problems. The state is the problem. Do you understand? I don't understand why they can't make the connection. But the state is never going to solve everybody's problems for them. It's not their job to do that. In fact, the state exists to create problems. The state only exists because there are enough problems that the people demand that somebody be there to help out. They say, please do something, and they outsource that to the state. The state creates these problems. They're certainly not going to be there to fix it. This is the problem that people fall into when they get into, when they take universal basic income or they take welfare or anything like this. It's a trap. It's a trap. If you think the state is there to solve your problems, to give you money to fix your problems, the state exists by taking money from other people. So it's taking money from other people to give to leftists and pro-collectivist people. And what he's saying is that they just want the state to satisfy everyone's needs for them. That's unrealistic. That doesn't happen. They're not anchored in logic and reality. This is why the people that come out there and they go, everybody's ideas should be heard. And I jump up and say, no, your ideas are fucking stupid. They don't deserve to be heard. They were heard a long time ago, and everyone said they were stupid then. This is called progress. This is where we move on. We don't sit around and talk about how we're going to try communism again. Stop doing that. You fucking idiots. Read a book. Can you read? 19% of Americans can't. So I would probably guess that most of the leftists can't read either. Well, they'll figure it out one way or another, because much like Yuri Bezmenov said, Uncle Ted said the same thing. Once you are no longer needed, you will be put up against the wall and disposed of. They hate, this is what he was talking about with leftists. He was saying that they hate and envy your success. Any successes that you have, leftists will hate that. So you have to understand, they believe that in order for you to succeed, it had to have been the result of you oppressing somebody else. They see this as a zero-sum game. Either if I am going to gain, that means it came at the expense of somebody else. Leftists' brains don't work correctly. They can't conceptualize working together with somebody to make something that's greater than the sum of its parts. They can't, because they're not builders. They're destroyers. They don't think like that. They don't understand that. So to a leftist, the idea of you are successful, you must be successful because you did something bad to somebody else. You can only be successful because you can only achieve something because you were bad to somebody else. The truth is, those who can do, those who can't become leftists. You're just a loser and a failure. And the reason why you can't conceptualize somebody having success is because you are unsuccessful. And you will always be unsuccessful. As long as you think that everybody else got there by cheating some people. Now, to be fair, some people did. And we see those. Those are the leftists that go into politics. Those are your own people that you're concerned about. So when you understand the mindset that Ted was angry against, not just the technology side, but the leftism side, was that you understand that these people think that the only way to succeed is by oppressing somebody else. This is stupid people logic. This is dumb people logic. And this is what made Ted so insane that he started mailing bombs to people. No, that it's frustrating. I get it. It's frustrating to deal with these people because the leftists are making arguments that don't work and passing them off as logic and reason. Anybody that has, you know, a functioning brain takes a look at it and goes, this is stupid. You can't, you just can't comprehend working together to build. If the idea is that these are leftist ideologies, the state is there to solve everybody's problems, And if you have more than somebody else, you must have taken it from them, because there's no possible way that you could actually be better at doing something than somebody else. The only explanation for your success is that you cheated. Not that you worked hard, not that you're smarter, not that you hustled, not that you have talent, not that you care, not that you invested in education, not that you tried, not that you went home early and got up early and did all the things. None of that stuff. That's all magical fairy dust that just happened to you because you're lucky. That's what they think. They think that none of that. So this is why leftists don't understand. I'm about to start sending bombs to people. This is fucking beast. He's so fired up. Leftists, what he discovered correctly is that leftists hate strong, good, successful people because they are known to be weak, evil losers who only exist to try to bring other people down. And he's right. He's right. That's what they do. They are the crabs in the crab bucket. And if you hang out with crabs, you will get crabs. You know what I'm saying? This is it. He also hated leftists because they inserted themselves into causes proclaiming to be saviors. It's so true. This, again, it goes back to his point of that they always have to have problems to solve. There's always some injustice that they're out there trying to fix, right? They're not actually fixing it because, like, as he said, it's the system. The system isn't fixable. So they can go out there and try to fix the problems that the system created, but they're never going to get anywhere with it. That's one of the reasons why he had such little respect for them. Because he was like, you're too stupid to understand that you're out here trying to fix this problem, but the problem is created by the system and the system isn't changing. You're over here trying to convince some tree, an apple tree, to start growing lemons. It's not going to work. So he said the real problems with leftists, according to Ted, was that this is an interesting take. Again, I said he's genius in his angles here. He said the real problem with leftists, and of course he mentions a bunch of other problems with them, but one of the things that the real problem at their core was that they don't actually oppose society. That's the interesting thing. He said, no, the leftists don't oppose society. Quite the opposite. They want to make society, quote, better. They want to make society better. They believe in serving society, not dismantling it. They think society should take care of them. They don't want society to go away. They're depending on society to take care of them because they can't take care of themselves because they're too fucking stupid and they don't understand the game. So they need society. They need the state to save them. They'll run their flags and say, we need to change, we need to end the patriarchy, and we need to end the policing, and we need to do all that stuff. That's bullshit. They're too stupid to know that they don't want any of that. What they really want is the system to be reinforced. They just want it to go the way they want it to go. They just want their people to be in charge of it. But they're not anti-state. I'm anti-state. They're pro-state. They want the state to serve them. That's it. That's the difference. And that's, again, part of the reason why Ted had zero respect for these people. Why would you? He was talking about how the natural world provided society with a stable and predictable framework, right? And that when you allow nature to provide the stable and predictable framework, you're good. When you move outside of that framework that nature provided, that's when you get into things like frustration and anger and defeatism and depression and low self-esteem as a society. Individualistically too, right? Individuals all feel that way. But you get enough individuals together and you've got a collective, right? You've got society. And if you've got enough people that are going against, what Ted considered to be the predictable framework that's provided to society by nature, once you get on the wrong side of that, he said you're in a system that can't be fixed and a system that will progressively get worse. Again, it's an industrialized system, and just think of an industrial machine that the longer you run it, it gets worse and worse and worse until it eventually just falls apart. So this is a clip from the manifesto. Science marches on blindly without regard to the real welfare of the human race or to any other standard, obedient only to the psychological needs of the scientists and of the government officials and corporate executives who provide the funds for research. Don't forget the foundations, Ted. Don't forget about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the United Nations and the Hewlett Foundation and all these groups. Don't forget about them, Uncle Ted. So going on here, it says that he's talking about industrial societies restricting freedoms, right? And how it just is in their nature to do so. He says it has no choice but to restrict and regulate human behavior. He felt that freedom and technological progress were incompatible with one another. That if you had too much progress on the technological side of things, you would wind up having a deficit of freedom. And very interesting take of his 30 years ago, right on cue, maybe even more so than a lot of people that are working out there today, but he had concerns not only about, well, he had concerns about genetic manipulation. He had major concerns about the future of that. But what was interesting was that he also understood that it wasn't just a problem with the science behind genetic manipulation, but the eventual laws about genetic manipulation and who is and isn't allowed to have access to it. So he talked about the legality behind genetic manipulation and what that can of worms looks like. I mentioned, you know, being one deviation less human and finding out at some point in the future, maybe, that, you know, a lawyer has maybe you're, maybe you're on trial for murder or something and you've got an attorney who wants, and you're guilty as hell, right? And your attorney wants to try out a new defense and says, you know, because you've taken the mRNA technology that you are one deviation less human and that therefore none of these laws apply to you and that you should be allowed to walk out of the courtroom free man because you're not a human being and you're no more subject to these laws than a dog would be. Think about that. I'm sure Ted did. I'm sure Ted thought about that recently. He actually kind of came at this, his feelings on the technocracy was a little bit like Clower and Piven, that strategy. Well, if this is going to happen, then let's overwhelm the system and break it so that we can reimagine it a different way. And he wanted to heighten social stress to encourage a total breakdown of the system, or at least a pre-weakening of the system. And he thought that a tech society would eventually let machines decide most things with a smaller group of people at the top deciding what those machines think. Again, World Economic Forum. Does it sound similar? I mean, is the small group of people at the top, the, you know, tech society letting machines make decisions on most things? I mean, we're definitely going there if we're not there already. The problem is, one of the things he said is that, and he's right, that the people will consider everyone else redundant when these jobs are automated. It's like, you don't need to work at McDonald's when there are robots flipping burgers because robots don't miss the bus or forget to come in or whatever, have to be paid overtime or healthcare or any of those things, right? So there's a lot of, from a business standpoint, automation, you have to consider it, especially if you're a fast food, let's say you own fast food restaurants in California. And you were already struggling at $16 an hour for minimum wage, basically like a human robot. Come in here, I need you to sweep up and flip burgers and do all this stuff. But at $16 an hour, that wasn't going to make a whole lot of sense. It was just barely. But at $20 mandatory now in California, maybe robots are in. Maybe you go to robots. That's the key. So was Ted wrong? Not really. He thought a tech society would let machines do most things with a small group of people at the top. The problem is when you've got a small group of people at the top and they realize that there's a large group of people that are, they've just made them irrelevant because the things that they used to do in exchange for money, a computer or a robot can now do it in exchange for nothing. I know how these people think. I read their writings. The next step is they're going to say, well, if these people aren't doing anything, then let's get rid of them. So this is the early stages to a push towards depopulation, eugenics through transhumanism. Transhumanism is eugenics. It is just the new brand name, the fancy futuristic name for eugenics. So the Washington Post, just so you guys know, the Washington Post published the Unabomber's manifesto on September 19th, 1995. It made him world famous. Do you know what sunk him? Do you know what ultimately led to him getting caught? It was an interesting slip up. And his brother's wife noticed it. FBI claims they noticed it too, but I don't know. There was a line in there, you know, the old sort of, I don't know, euphemism, whatever the saying, you know, have your cake and eat it too. You know, he used a line in the manifesto where he said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And what stuck with the reader was that it was this terminology. His brother's wife had said, I think this is your brother doing this. And he's like, why do you say that? And he's like, because the wording in this thing is some of the same wording he's used around us. And they looked into it and they're like, fuck, I think you're right. And it turned out they were right. That there were certain little phrases, you know, very specific, unique writing style. That's what wound up sinking him in the end. Let's wrap up with this, because I told you that I was going to tell you that he was put through the ringer. You know, he really was. Ted Kaczynski was put through MK Ultra, and that is part of the reason why he turned out the way he did. From the fall of 1959 until the spring of 1962, Dr. Henry Murray, director, Harvard Psychological Clinic, formerly of the OSS, which later became the CIA, he did something. He used 22 Harvard undergrads, including Ted Kaczynski, in experiments testing the limits of extreme stress on the human mind. I guess they found his limit. They used a variety of methods on him. Timothy Leary was also at Harvard in 1960 testing drugs. Timothy Leary of the CIA. They messed with this guy until he reacted. They weaponized Ted Kaczynski in college. They broke his mind through MK Ultra and LSD, and they shattered him. And then they used him, you know. They broke him and then they used him. You know, because here's the thing, if this guy goes off into the woods and decides that he wants to start mailing bombs to people randomly, we can use that. That's not a bad thing for the intelligence agencies. They're fine with that. You can put them on the FBI's most wanted list. They don't give a shit. That's the strategy of tension, man. The fact that bombs may be going off, that's used to keep everybody a little destabilized. That's fine. You need to know that there's crazy people out there that may put a bomb in your mail. So it's the reason why, okay, again, it's not to excuse away his actions. Of course, when you're building bombs and mailing them to people, you're doing the wrong thing. If you're building bombs and mailing them to the people who did this to your mind, well, then you're probably justified. Still illegal. You'll still go to prison for it. But I would have a little bit more respect if the bombs were being mailed to Dr. Henry Murray or Dr. Timothy Leary or any of these guys who were involved in torturing you. I wouldn't question you sending a bomb to them later. That make sense to me. But some random guy who did nothing to you, I don't like that. I don't think that's not how you get things done. I mean, that's not how that's how you come out of this as the bad guy. And Ted Kaczynski, after the media got done with him, he got the treatment, man. They pinned everything on him. Like, lunatic, living by himself in the woods, in a cabin with no running water, no electricity, building bombs, mad scientist, all that stuff. I mean, you know, that's America, baby. That's what the media loves, that stuff, right? This idea that it's just some guy out there. He could be anywhere. He could be out in the woods. He could be your next door neighbor. Have you checked in on your next door neighbor? What is he doing? Maybe he's writing a manifesto. Have you seen him writing a manifesto? Maybe, probably. So again, this is part of the creep of technology, technocracy, the impending digital prison that's being built around us. It's real. You know, the creeping technocracy is real. And Ted thought we had lost our way. I don't know. I mean, after years of being tortured, used as a human guinea pig, maybe it's time to ask if Uncle Ted was right after all.
Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can rate the show. Maybe we've earned 5 stars. I hope so. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.